This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Under the Constitution of the Gambia, the so-called date of 19th of January is not cast in stone.
That's Gambian President Yahya Jammeh saying he does not intend to step down January 19th, Inauguration Day. Details coming up. Also, two suicide bomb attacks in northeast Nigeria kill at least 4 people and injure 15. And mass voter registration drive is launched today in Kenya ahead of the August elections. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, there's tragic news being reported from the Gambia today. The online Freedom newspaper reports that the 8-year-old son of President-elect Adama Barrow has died after being bitten by a wild dog last night. Few details are available at this time. The Freedom newspaper reports it happened in the town of Manji, about 15 kilometers west of the capital in the greater Banjul district. Meanwhile, the Chief Justice of the Gambian Supreme Court says the court will not hold a hearing today on an injunction request filed by President Yahya Jammeh. Jammeh had filed for an injunction to try to stop Adama Barrow from being sworn in as the new president Thursday. However, the Nigerian-born Chief Justice says there are not enough judges available. The Supreme Court, which is also supposed to hear Jammeh's challenge of the election, may not be able to meet until May. Most of the court's judges are from Nigeria and Sierra Leone, and they have no plans to travel to the Gambia anytime soon. Jammeh called the Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf yesterday and asked her to speed the arrival of the judges. Jammeh says he won't step down until the Supreme Court decides. He spoke to The Nation last night.
Under the Constitution of the Gambia, the so-called date of 19th of January is not cast in stone. As we have an injunction in the court and we have a problem with our elections, all parties should await the outcome of the Supreme Court, which will be the only legal entity to toss out this case once and for all. I want to assure you that whatever we want to do will be based on the Constitution of the Gambia, and as we discuss that all must pass through the Constitution of the Gambia, which is the supreme authority.
That was Yahya Jammeh speaking last night. Adama Barrow, who led an opposition coalition, was declared the winner December 1st by the Electoral Commission. The Associated Press reports he's currently in neighboring Senegal, awaiting Thursday's inauguration. The head of the Electoral Commission has fled to Senegal, saying he has received death threats. West African leaders met with Jammeh and Barrow on Friday, but said no deal had been reached. Nigeria's army reportedly has 800 troops ready to intervene if Jammeh does not step down. If in yet another development in the Gambia today, Finance and Economic Affairs Minister reportedly has resigned. No reason was given. There were two suicide bomb attacks early this morning at the University of Maiduguri in northeastern Nigeria. One of the explosions at a mosque killed a professor, a child, and the attacker. A second explosion at the university entrance gate killed only the attacker. At least 15 people were injured in the blasts. At least one of the attackers is believed to have been a teenage girl. No one has claimed responsibility, but suspicion falls on Boko Haram militants. They've been launching numerous suicide bomb attacks in northeast Nigeria after being weakened by multinational military offensive over the past few years. Since Boko Haram first launched attacks in northeastern Nigeria in 2009, about 20,000 people have been killed and more than 2.5 million people displaced. Kenya kicked off its final mass voter registration drive today ahead of the August elections, but the electoral process has been fraught with controversy. There have been protests against the electoral body, and there's a contentious new law that allows manual voting and counting as a backup for biometric voting systems. VOA's Jill Craig went to some registration sites in Nairobi to speak with new voters.
It's a hot day here on the sidewalk outside Nairobi's St. Peter Clavers Primary School. But the 20 or so people standing in line behind a small desk don't seem to mind. They are here to register to vote in Kenya's upcoming August elections.
It's our right to vote for the next president and our MPs and all of that.
This is the first day of the final mass voter registration drive being conducted by Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. The other took place around this same time last year. The drive will end in 1 month's time, and so far, IEBC communication manager Andrew Limo says things seem to be going well.
Yeah, I think the reports we're getting in, it's encouraging. Of course, for like any other exercise, there will be teething problems on the first day in terms of deployment. Some people may not have arrived at their centers in good time, and so they may have opened late and things like that. But these are not major problems.
But the IEBC has faced its share of challenges in the past. Protests organized by Kenya's political opposition in mid-2016 resulted in the entire electoral commission being replaced. President Uhuru Kenyatta recently signed an amendment to the election law allowing for manual voting and counting should the electronic system fail. The opposition argues this latest move opens the door for vote rigging. New voter Wyclef Kafwa says he is not in favor of the manual system and is unsure about the new electoral commission.
We are still in the process of weighing how it is. At this time, still early to say whether they are fine or they are not fine.
But first-time voter and university student Ted Mwathanyana says he's not concerned that these issues could negatively affect next year's elections.
When the right things are happening, there always has to be challenges. So I think it will all work out. People also have to accept the changes that we're having.
The IEBC's Limo says his organization is targeting the roughly 9 million Kenyans over the age of 18 who have a national ID card or passport but who have not yet registered to vote. Mass voter registration is scheduled to conclude February 14th, but potential voters can still register prior to 90 days before the elections by going to their constituency offices or public service centers. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenyans also are making 1 year since dozens of soldiers stationed are marking 1 year since dozens of soldiers stationed in Somalia were killed in an attack by the militant group Al-Shabaab. The day is especially painful for families that lost loved ones that day or have yet to discover what happened to their missing sons and brothers. Mohammed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
On January 15, 2016, Somali militant group Al-Shabaab attacked a Kenyan military base at El Ada in Somalia's Gedo region. The attack was captured in an Al-Shabaab propaganda video that shows well-armed fighters storming and overrunning the base after a huge explosion, said to be the work of a suicide bomber. Al-Shabaab said it killed more than 100 soldiers, although other sources have put the death toll even higher. The Kenyan government has remained silent about what transpired that day and the casualties. The day of the attack, Nancy Njeri made a frantic call to her husband's cell phone. She says she did not know he was in El Ade and could not get her calls to go through. Then she called the phone number he was using in Somalia, and a person who answered told her he was one of the soldiers killed in Somalia. She says she did not believe it and was called by the military a week later to go for a DNA test. 2 weeks later, she was told her husband was dead. This was not the first time Al-Shabaab fighters have successfully targeted an isolated base held by soldiers with AMISOM, the African Union mission in Somalia. In June 2015, 50 Burundian soldiers were killed when the Islamist militant attacked an AMISOM base in Lagos, central Somalia. 3 months later, 19 Ugandan troops were killed when Al-Shabaab attacked a base in Janale in Lower Shabelle region. Patrick Wabomba is one of the dozens of parents still searching for loved ones after the El Ade attack. He says no one knows whether his son is alive or dead. The family was given DNA tests, he says, but after that, they were told to go back home and wait for a report. They still have no information about his son. Al-Shabaab said it captured 12 soldiers in the attack, half of whom have since appeared in the group's propaganda videos. Heroes Oasis Counseling Center, which provides psychological support to the families of Kenyan soldiers, was founded by Immaculate Kukubo, who says life has been difficult for families who lost loved ones in Somalia.
The state of some of these families is really, really sad. They are very traumatized, especially the families of soldiers who are still unaccounted for. Because these families, in 1 minute, they are thinking, maybe our son is still out there. And in another minute, they are thinking, no, it is not possible that 1 year down the line, our son is out there. So they oscillate from hopefulness to hopelessness.
Kenya sent its troops to Somalia in 2011 after a series of attacks on its soil by Al-Shabaab. The group has vowed to keep attacking Kenya and its forces until it withdraws its soldiers from Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. And at 17 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Gambia's chief says the Supreme Court will not consider President Yahya Jammeh's injunction request today to stop Thursday's inauguration of Adama Barrow. And two suicide bomb attacks in northeast Nigeria kill at least 3 and injure 15. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. An Egyptian court has rejected a government decision to turn over two Red Sea islands to Saudi Arabia. The Supreme Administrative Court ruled against the deal announced last April to hand over the islands at the mouth of the Gulf of Aqaba. The islands, Tiran and Sanafir, control the shipping lanes to the Red Sea. The Associated Press reports the landmark decision may increase tensions between the Egyptian and Saudi governments. Many had criticized the deal, calling it a surrender of Egyptian territory by the LCC government. The court rejected claims that the islands originally belonged to Saudi Arabia and that they were handed over to Egypt in the 1950s to protect against attacks by Israel. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day in America. It's a national holiday to honor the man most closely identified with the civil rights movement that ended racial segregation in the U.S. and helped to end discrimination in employment, education, housing, voting, and public services. But Dr. King was assassinated nearly 50 years ago, long before a majority of Americans were even born. VOA's Adam Phillips asked some of his fellow New Yorkers to offer their opinions of Martin Luther King Jr. and his legacy.
It's almost 5 p.m., and Flotantina Mariani, an African-American hospital technician, has just ended her shift. She's looking forward to the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. She says that almost 50 years after his death, King's legacy is still very much alive.
What he represents in my heart is that he had gotten a lot of black people together. He made a lot of inspiration of how we should feel proud about ourselves as people of color, and also as opportunities of what you could be. You use what he did by using his philosophies that you can overcome anything. Even adversity on your job, in the street, you know, just interacting with people you can overcome. He makes me want to sing, and the song that I like singing is We Shall Overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday.
On the face of it, one might assume that Jake Berman, a privileged white 21-year-old who attends an Ivy League university, and Ms. Mariani have little in common. But Dr. King's legacy touches them both in similar ways.
Definitely a feeling that you can overcome something that seems pretty impossible, whether it be a small accomplishment or maybe even a bigger thing in school. If it's the bully or if it's the group you hate or anything like that, just being able to maybe just like rise above and do it in a humble, respectful manner that wasn't violent or rude, that is definitely a great feeling, and that's what he did.
78-year-old Victor Rotner, a white man, considers King to be a great humanitarian and a great American. King's courage continues to move him to this day.
He never backed down on anything, and he was never mean about anything. He had never put any white people down, and I believed everything he's done was worth it. We got so much from it, the black community, and so did the white community.
School is out, and Joy Beth and some other nannies are watching their charges in a Central Park playground. Born in Trinidad, Joy Beth is an American citizen today. She credits Martin Luther King Jr. with helping to make her good life possible.
He paved the way for people like me for equal rights. He did what he did, maybe today we wouldn't be able to be sitting on the bus or even sitting by you right now. There'll be the park will be segregated. There'll be one side for the black, one side for the white. That's what I remember about him. He did something special.
Cheryl, another nanny, is also grateful that King lived.
I think he did an excellent job, and you know, he had a dream, and his dream did came true because we had a black president.
Still, Cheryl is unsure whether her white employer will let her take the day off on the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday.
Usually, I don't like to work that day because I think we should honor his rights. And people who we work for, like white people, of course, they should make us honor that day, respect that day, because, you know, he lives in us. We should have that respect because he fights for black people.
White people, too.
If they want to, you know. But it's more a black people thing, you know, because he was a black man fighting for black rights, you know. So if white people do it, it's a nice thing. That means that his dream is coming true. We are trying to reunite with one another, which is great.
Most Americans can agree that what Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement achieved is worthy of honoring with a national holiday. But it's also clear to many that the work for equality of opportunity and social justice continues. Faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase, said King, and we must learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Donald Trump will become the 45th president of the United States on January 20th. He'll take the oath of office on the steps of the Capitol, with millions watching on television and around the world. Historically, U.S. presidential inaugurations have symbolized the peaceful transfer of power and often reflect political change, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone in Washington.
I, Dwight D. Eisenhower, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
It is a ritual of American democracy as old as the Republic. The inauguration of a new president marks the end of one era and the beginning of another, both in good times and in bad. In 1933, Franklin Roosevelt took the oath of office in the midst of the Great Depression.
Let me assert my firm belief. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
In 1961, John Kennedy inspired a new generation of Americans with a call to service.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
20 years later, Republican Ronald Reagan came to power, promising to rein in the size of government.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Following his victory in November, President-elect Donald Trump went on a victory tour and vowed to deliver on his campaign promises.
This is truly an exciting time to be alive. The script is not yet written. We do not know what the page will read tomorrow. But for the first time in a long time, what we do know is that the pages will be authored by each and every one of you. It's a movement.
The country remains divided in the wake of Trump's victory, and one of the new president's first challenges will be forging unity, says analyst John Fortier.
No, I think it's a very important opportunity for the first step to really speak to the country to say now as president, perhaps some of the differences we have on the campaign trail are behind us.
Historically, presidential inaugurations have become moments when the heat of the political campaign is set aside in the spirit of continuity and democracy, says John Hudak.
President Obama will ride in a car with President-elect Trump to the U.S. Capitol from the White House and peacefully hand over power and watch his successor, not the successor he wanted, but his successor nonetheless, take the oath of office. That doesn't happen everywhere in the world, and it's an important display in this country.
Trump is known for his off-the-cuff speaking style at his rallies, but what about his inaugural address? It's unpredictable, says analyst Norm Ornstein.
An inaugural address is generally crafted and written in advance, and presidents read their inaugural addresses. Will Donald Trump throw out the script and go off on his own? We're in uncharted territory here.
Donald Trump is about to become the 45th president, and the tone he sets at the beginning of his tenure will likely provide clues as to the type of leader he aspires to be. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
On Friday, January 20th, all eyes will be on Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of the 45th U.S. President, Donald J. Trump. Be a part of history. Join VOA for 2 hours of special live coverage broadcast on radio and television and available on the internet at voanews.com. Tune in Friday, January 20th, starting at 1600 UTC.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou will discuss improving nutrition, fighting non-communicable diseases, with guest Tamba Ray Stevenson, founder and CEO of Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics and Agriculture, WANDA. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh fired 12 ambassadors after they called for him to step aside and allow the newly elected opposition leader Adama Barrow to take power, a recommendation he has also heard from ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.